take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Girl, this one is so sad.
It's just, it's all shitty all around. So welcome to True Crime Obsessed. Oh, I hope you're ready to have fun. And I'll, you know, just drive myself off a cliff while
okay,
I'm at it.
Perfect. Hi, Julia Bezzavalli.
Hi, Patrick Hines.
Oh, fam, listen, if you are on the Patreon or if you want to join the Patreon, we wanted to let you know our next monthly drag bingo is going to be Wednesday, December 11th at 7 p.m.
Okay, great.
So it's a week from this upcoming Wednesday.
Okay.
I'm very excited. We all got all dressed up for the Halloween one. I might come as Santa. I might come as an elf. I might come as Mrs. Claus. I don't know what's going to happen.
Okay, great.
What about you?
I don't know. Okay. I have no idea. We'll see.
You can just come as you.
Maybe I'll just come as me.
Just come as you.
I'm kind of December themed.
Yeah, that's
Can
true.
Can I just be?
You are very December themed.
You know?
I'm not going to tell them when your birthday is, but it's around then.
They know it's the winter solstice. We've discussed it.
Oh, that's right. I forget you got a little twinkle in your eye when you say the winter solstice.
If I could pick my birthday, I would pick that. Do you want to know why?
Why?
It's your least favorite thing. It's the longest night of the year.
Oh, God, it's dark at 2 in the afternoon.
Exactly.
The sun doesn't come up until 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
I just love it. It's like the ultimate. It's like winter is finally here. Really, if I had to pick, and it's not about me. We're doing bingo.
We're doing bingo. But I also wanted to say, if you do join the Patreon to come to the bingo, you also get like over 400 full ad-free bonus episodes. Oh, and
that too.
Even more importantly, our interview with Sarah Turney.
Oh, yes.
So Sarah Turney is the executive producer of this documentary. She's also, of course, the main player in this documentary.
We would not be here if not for Sarah Turney.
We would not be.
She's changed the game.
The interview that we did with Sarah is so wonderful. She is such a wonderful person and has done so much in the true crime space. We're very lucky to know her. There's so much that goes on. We had a lot of questions. There's just things we wanted more of. We're going to get all of that from Sarah, and that is live right now over on the Patreon feed.
Yeah, there's just a lot happening, and it's all like, there's just a lot.
It's a lot. Shall we get to it?
Let's get to it.
Let's do it.
On the last day of her junior year, Alyssa went missing, and that changed everything. My dad told me that Alyssa had run away. I was in shock. I felt so much guilt. I blamed myself. But because I was so young, it's hard to rely on my own memory. So I had to go back and try to piece together the truth.
Alyssa, do not leave the building whatsoever.
Searching for the truth, I was frustrated. I wanted to tell Alyssa's story
in this episode.
And that's when I found podcasting and TikTok. And I start to put together the pieces.
You got me in trouble, Dad.
Nobody's heard from Alyssa.
I'm trying to meet you in the middle here, Dad.
You've destroyed your own family.
When I start to uncover more facts about my own life that I never knew, it starts to make me question everything.
So we start on May 17th, 2001. We're in Phoenix, Arizona. This is the day that Alyssa Turney goes missing. Alyssa is Sarah Turney's older sister.
Yeah, it's Alyssa's last day of junior year. It's Sarah's last day of seventh grade.
Sarah remembers it being a great day. She says she got on the bus, went to the water park, had a great day with her friends, and then after that, her dad picked her up at school.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, did Sarah Turney's school take them to the water park for the last day of school?
Because if they did, crazy.
I'm going back to school and I'm going to that school.
That's how they do it in Phoenix, huh?
It's hot there.
Yeah.
It gets
and the
real.
Last day of school, too?
Yeah.
And I don't want to hear that it's a dry heat. I know it's a dry heat.
It's
still hot. Heat is heat.
I did my book party show there once there. I don't remember when, but it was meant to be. It was cold here.
Yeah.
It was hot there.
I know the humidity, really. I'd much rather a dry heat.
For sure. I also love Phoenix, just for the record.
Great.
I love it there.
I don't know if they took them to the water park. That's what it sounds like, though.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. So after school, Sarah's dad picks her up. And he's kind of frantic because he's saying, your sister Alyssa isn't answering her cell phone. Can you call her and see if she'll answer?
And Sarah calls her a few times and there's no answer. And so Sarah and her dad get home.
We get home and I go right to Alyssa's bedroom. I was sure that she'd be there. But she wasn't. I saw the contents of her backpack dumped all over the ground. And then there was a note and her cell phone.
Everything in her backpack was like dumped all over the floor. There's a note and her cell phone is next to the note.
This note is heartbreaking. It says, "Dad and Sarah, when you dropped me off at school today, I decided that I really am going to California. Sarah, you didn't want me around. Look, you got it. I'm gone. Dad, that's why I saved my money. I took $300 from you, Alyssa."
And it looks like a teen girl's handwriting. It definitely looks like she wrote it.
Yes.
That call out to Sarah, Sarah will tell us, will stick with her forever.
Yeah.
Which is like, we know, Sarah, it's not your fault. You didn't do anything, whatever. But like reading that is like, oh my God.
One of the things that I just want to say this now that I loved about this documentary so much was that Sarah forgives her younger self, or even more than that, knows that her younger self does not need any forgiveness.
Right. Yeah.
For not knowing what was happening with Alyssa, for just being the person who she was. Like, none of this is her fault.
Sarah was allowed to have all of the feelings, too, as a young girl going through this. And yes, the acknowledgement of her younger self and that it was all okay to feel those things and what she was feeling. So,
like, I don't know if Sarah's in therapy or not, but if therapy works, you know what I mean? It's like, work on yourself and knowing that, like, you're not responsible for the bad shit that other people do.
And talking to that younger version of yourself. Oh my God.
I live with 15-year-old me, by the way.
Same.
Oh, my God. So Dad panics.
Yeah, calling everyone, friends, family, like, trying to track down a Alyssa.
Later in the night, he calls the police and says, "My teenage daughter ran away." So they mark her as a runaway. But they do not come visit the house. They do not come speak to my father.
What is it about the word runaway that somehow makes it so that we don't have to give a shit? Because I'm trying to understand that, like, what makes it okay that a 16-year-old girl is missing? Like, if the vibe is very, oh, she's just a runaway, like, why? Like, she's still in danger.
And she's still a minor.
She's still a young girl who ran away.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't really care if she stole the $300 and went, like, on her own accord. She's still in danger.
I couldn't agree more. And I also gotta say, like, when the dad calls and says, "My problem child is 16 and she's run away." I think she was 17.
She's 17. Yeah. Still.
Yeah, same thing. Like, I think we got to look into that. You know what I mean?
There are many, many things that should have been looked into that were not. We will get infuriated at all of them.
Yes. And now Sarah says Alyssa running away made sense to Sarah, because Sarah says that she knew that when Alyssa turned 18, which would have been the following year, she had dreams of moving out of the house, getting away, just sort of going out on her own. And so Sarah says, "I slept in her room that night because I truly thought she'd be back."
Yeah,
and I'm
so
like, and Sarah, this is the first time Sarah like starts to cry. And it's like, it's just fucking heartbreaking. And like, one of the questions I have for Sarah is, what else would you have done with your life if you didn't have to spend all this time focusing on this?
Yeah.
If this fucking person in your life hadn't made it, and by that I mean the dad, the person who did this, who didn't make it so that this had to become your life's purpose, you know? I always wonder about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, I don't know, but I wonder... if Sarah would still become a champion and an advocate because she's so fucking good at it.
And like, you know, just some of you might not know this, but remember that podcast Media Pressure that Julie Murray made? Julie and Sarah made it together.
Yes.
Sarah went to Julie to say, like, we got to tell Maura's story. Let's do it on your terms. And that's Sarah's whole mission, is for families of victims of true crime, survivors of true crime, the missing, for the families to tell the stories on their own terms. It is such a noble mission. And it happened because of her experience, advocating for her own sister.
Yeah.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Bachelor Happy Hour. I'm Joe.
And I'm Serena.
And we are here with the iHeart Music Awards and David's Bridal,
who are sponsoring this podcast, and we are so grateful to them.
Thank you for finishing my sentence. And we are here with our favorites, Dotton and Charity.
Where were you in bikinis in the snow?
Montana.
Okay, she flew out and joined you guys.
Yeah. Isn't it cold?
No, it was,
bikinis in the snow.
We risk getting hypothermia for those photos.
Wow.
They were sick though.
I don't get bikinis in the snow.
Like it's like, just it's like an aesthetic. Little,
yeah,
I don't
thank
know.
You.
If him and I did that, if we did like Speedos in the snow, you guys would be like douchebags. Like,
no, I wouldn't.
Well, Speedos
would
not, in the snow would be hilarious.
Really?
Like, I would be like, let's see it. Come on. I would not complain.
You're
I
here first,
beg
folks.
Him to do stuff like that. And he's like, no.
That's going to be the name of this podcast episode. Bachelor Happy Hour, Speedos in the Snow.
David's Bridal, if you're listening.
With David's Bridal.
Sponsored by branding a little bit.
Sponsored by David's
Bridal, Speedos in the Snow.
Room wear.
So we have a lot of footage, a ton of home movies.
Yeah.
So we go back to 1990 and it's this like super cute footage of Sarah and Alyssa.
This video, because we don't know that Sarah's in this video right away, because it's Alyssa claiming that she's 6 when she's really 5, which like Daisy does that all the time.
Such a little kid thing.
But then it cuts to the playpen and we see 16-month-old Sarah in a little rocker outfit.
She's wearing like a leather jacket and a sideways baseball hat.
I was but like with a bottle at the same time because she's just a baby. Just like, I was like scream laughing.
It's so great. And Sarah says,
Alyssa wasn't just my sister. She was the only mom I really ever can remember because I never really got to know my mother, Barbara.
She was the only mom I can ever really remember. And I'm like, whoa.
I know.
So Barbara is their mother. Sarah explains the whole situation. Sarah never really got to know her. Barbara was a mortgage loan officer. And Sarah's father was trying to get a loan. And that's how they met and fell in love.
Yeah. Then we learned that her dad was a deputy sheriff for a few years, then became a union electrician.
Remember that. We will get back to it with a vengeance.
And now this is a crazy big blended family. So the dad came into the marriage with the three oldest boys, Rhett, James, and Mike. And the mom had John and Alyssa. And together, the mom and the dad have Sarah.
Yeah, so there's six kids in the house altogether and eight people in total.
That is just an insane amount of children.
It's a lot. But Sarah says something here that I love and that we talk about all the time. She said, we weren't allowed to use half or step or anything. We were all brothers and sisters. And we actually hear her father saying it on the video. And it's kind of casually said, like it doesn't sound performative or like it's for show, but he's behind the camera and he's correcting Alyssa.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, not half. Like, we're all brothers and sisters. We're all a family here. So if you don't know how this story ends, you're like, oh, my God,
it's
how
sweet.
Lovely.
Yeah. I want to point out, this is one of those documentaries that has so much home video footage, like
Tons.
You were just saying. Now, at first, it seems sweet. And Sarah's going to say to us over and over again, we just thought our dad was trying to, like, capture, like, memories. And, you know, like, video cameras were kind of new-ish back then or whatever. It is so fucked up why we have
it's
all this footage.
It's very nefarious.
It's very nefarious. Like, the dad is completely obsessive, especially over Alyssa. So, like, we have great footage, but like, I wish we didn't, you know?
Yeah. So Teresa is Sarah's aunt. She's Sarah's mother's sister.
Yeah.
Sarah was probably three when my sister first was diagnosed with the lung cancer. And we were told from the get-go that her diagnosis was terminal.
And it was terminal. It was very, very serious and very, very aggressive.
We see this footage of Sarah at the funeral, like baby Sarah, 3-year-old Sarah. And the dad is saying, like, where's mama? And she said, mama went to heaven. And like, she's three. She's not crying. She's not even really all that sad in that moment because, like, she doesn't really know it or what's going on yet. This is the first time I started to cry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a parent. The idea that, like, if I had died when Daisy was three, she probably wouldn't remember me. It's, you know.
Yeah. But it's also, though, the first time in the documentary that we see the father baiting them on camera.
Yes.
That's a very inappropriate thing to ask a
100%.
Little girl with a camera in her face.
At the funeral.
On the steps of the church.
Yes.
Like, it's very... But this is who he was on camera. This shows a little bit of his motivation. He's baiting her in a really shitty way. Like, what, you want her to start crying?
Right. And
would you want, like, footage of your daughter crying?
Right. And that's, like, right. Like, watching
the worst day of her little life to date.
With, like, watching it, like, the second time, knowing what the purpose of the videos actually is.
Yeah.
It's just, it's very sick and sad.
And, like, again, I'm very fortunate. I have no experience with being that young and having a loss like that. Or I'm not a parent, so I don't know how I would handle it. But there's something about it that feels very inappropriate to ask your three-year-old in kind of a casual, everything's hunky-dory kind of way on camera.
Yes.
It feels
100%.
Very weird. Because it's not sitting down having a conversation with a three-year-old about her
exactly.
new world now.
Or and trying to explain to her what's going on. Because all I can imagine is, like, that night they're going to go home and she's going to be confused. Like, when is mommy coming home from heaven,
like, there's
to
no,
put me to sleep?
Yeah, there's no warmth there. He's, like, several feet away from her on the camera. It's just like, once you clock it, you're kind of like, just like, remember that motivation behind the camera, you know?
And, like, it gets so sad because, you know, Sarah says when mom died, things really changed around the house. Like, the dad was left with six kids all by himself. Now, the dad is a piece of shit. He's a monster from hell. But even still, I cannot imagine what that must have been like.
Right, on top of
the
everything
loss of
that
your
changes
spouse. Yeah.
With the loss of a mother like that. And then, six kids all by himself. And, like, Aunt Teresa says that Alyssa and Sarah were, quote, rambunctious. And we see footage of them, like, fighting and hitting each other. But to me, I'm like, that's, like, typical little girl sister stuff.
Yes.
That's, like...
But also, when you lose a parent that age, like, you are going to start acting out. And that does need to be addressed.
When you have a father like that.
Exactly. And, like, one of the things that really stood out to me was, like, Sarah saying,
our house was dirtier. It really felt like living in a bachelor pad.
I got a call one day from John. John was angry, and he said, you know, Dad doesn't get up and take care of the girls. He doesn't make sure they're going to school. There's no food in the house.
the kids were calling Aunt Teresa saying there's no food in the house.
They're not taking care of Sarah and Alyssa. Like, they doesn't care if the kids are going to school or not. No one's cooking. No one's cleaning.
And eventually, like, that's what Sarah meant when she says Alyssa's kind of the only mom she knew, is because Alyssa was, like, trying to fit that role. And it's, and Sarah says it's totally unfair to put that pressure on Alyssa, that she just realizes girl in her grief, like, oh, I kind of have to step up here.
And also, Aunt Teresa says, like, we were calling all the time. We did whatever we could, but within less than a year, everybody outside of that immediate family living in the house was completely cut off.
And specifically, the mom side of the family.
Yeah.
Major red flag.
Yeah.
And it's just so cruel. Why would you cut off any connection that those kids have to
the
that
mother.
Woman?
Like, I know.
And that family, and that, and it's not fair to Aunt Teresa either.
Right.
Like, they're all... If we're not going to do half brother, half sister, if we're all one big, loving, happy family, right?
Yeah.
Then why are we cutting?
Right.
But again, knowing what we know, major red flag, it's part of the isolation.
Exactly. Because immediately, all of the brothers move out. They're all much older, and they move out, and it leaves just Sarah and Alyssa home with the dad.
And she says, just because Alyssa was the oldest, but she did become the mom, cooking, cleaning, and, like, making sure Sarah brushed her hair. And Sarah's getting emotional because she's, like, looking back, and she's like, one summer, it's like, someone had to come over and detangle Sarah's hair because she wasn't brushing it. And what do they know? They're kids.
She said there was a whole entire summer that no one brushed my hair.
And yeah.
That broke me.
Yeah.
You know? Look, I think about Daisy. Daisy's got, like, this thick hair that I have to brush it 3 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
If Daisy went an entire summer without somebody
you're swimming, you're getting your hair
wet.
Yeah,
and, like, all I can think of is, like, kids are making fun of you. You probably smell. Your hair looks awful.
Oh, it's, like, awful.
It's just, like, on top of the loss of the mother and the brothers moving out and the family being cut off, like, I think the point was to make these kids as emotionally broken as possible.
Right. And also, again, the isolation and very reliant on this little family unit.
Yeah.
Because Sarah and Alyssa's relationship, like, you know, Sarah says she didn't really talk about Alyssa much after she was gone. And Sarah was mentioned in the note, and that haunted her. But Sarah explains, like, we loved hard and we fought hard.
Yes.
And, like, we'd be, like, screaming and pulling each other's hair. And then 2 seconds later, dancing in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Like, to me, I'm like, that's sisterhood. Like, that's little, you know.
100%. And, like, Sarah's saying, like, it started out that we fought a lot. But
as Alyssa got older and entered high school, I thought that she was the coolest. And she was experimenting with drinking and smoking marijuana. You know, normal teenage stuff. And I was an annoying little sister. And I would tattle on her.
And Sarah found herself in the role of, like, the annoying younger sister.
Yeah, Alyssa was the cool older sister.
Yeah.
Sarah, and this is, like, a very common dynamic.
And what Sarah's about to tell us is that the dad would always plant in Sarah's mind, Alyssa's bad. She's a bad kid. You got to keep an eye on her. You got to tell me if she's doing bad shit. And Sarah says, I would tattle on her.
She told on her, like, a lot.
Yeah.
So, like, Alyssa would be drinking or smoking and Sarah would rat on her. And so the day Alyssa goes missing, she's 17 years old. And Mike, the dad, says, I picked her up from school, took her out to lunch on the last day. I'm like, aren't there, like, activities on the last day?
I know.
Taking
Sarah's
her out to
been
lunch?
At the water park all day.
Like, okay. They had a big fight. Alyssa was talking about how she wanted more freedom. The dad, again, according to the dad, drops Alyssa off at home. His last memory is Alyssa angrily walking down the hallway, quote, with her hair flying behind her. And then I guess he just left and went back to work.
Right.
That's his story.
And then, like, they come home and find the note.
Right. Now, a week after Alyssa runs away, according to Mike, the dad, there's this 5 a.m. phone call.
And this is corroborated by call records.
Yeah. I still have more questions about
Same.
This.
Same. I have a million questions.
Which we'll get to later.
And we'll talk to Sarah more about this too.
Yeah, but there's this phone call at 5 in the morning, and the dad says Alyssa calls at 5 a.m. She's screaming at him, cursing at him, demanding that everyone leave her alone, and then she hangs up. And what I'm thinking is, but Alyssa is left alone.
Right.
She ran away.
Exactly.
Like, why would she be calling and acting like she's being harassed? Nobody knows where she is. She's been missing for a week. You've been left alone.
Exactly.
So this phone call immediately is very strange.
Very red flaggy.
Yeah. But they talked to the phone company, apparently, and the call was made from a payphone in Riverside, California. Now, they didn't make this clear at first in the documentary, but Alyssa went missing in Arizona.
And Sarah says, like, she always had plans of moving to California when she was 18 anyway. So this makes sense that, like, she's out there. She went to California. She's alive and does not want to be found.
And she left her cell phone at home, so no one's been contacting her. And instead of calling Sarah, her sister, or any of her friends,
yeah,
she calls and screams at her father, who she hasn't spoken to, demanding she be left alone. Which
right.
is like, what?
And Sarah says, like, right after this, she and her dad made a trip to California. They're able to trace the call to a specific payphone in Riverside.
Soon after, I go on a trip with him to California. We go to the convenience store. But there's no surveillance. There's no trace of who made a call. Essentially, there's nothing. But I remember my dad saying the phone call from Riverside was proof Alyssa was out there still alive.
This is proof that Alyssa is out there and alive, and we have to find her.
Right.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Bachelor Happy Hour. I'm Joe.
And I'm Serena.
And we are here with the iHeart Music Awards and David's Bridal,
who are sponsoring this podcast, and we are so grateful to them.
Thank you. Thank you for finishing my sentence. And we are here with our favorites, Dotton and Charity.
Where were you in bikinis in the snow?
Montana.
Okay. She flew out and joined you guys. Yeah.
Isn't it cold?
No, it was...
Well, yeah, it's bikinis in the snow.
We risk getting hypothermia for those photos.
Wow.
They were sick, though.
I don't get bikinis in the snow.
Like it's like, just it's like an aesthetic. Little, yeah, I don't know. You.
If him and I did that, if we did like Speedos in the snow... You guys would be like douchebags.
No, I wouldn't.
Well, Speedos
would
not, in the snow would be hilarious. Really?
I would be like, let's see it. Come on. I would not complain. I'd beg
first,
him
folks.
To do stuff like that. He's like, nah.
That's going to be the name of this podcast episode. Bachelor Happy Hour, Speedos in the Snow.
David's Bridal, if you're listening.
With David's Bridal.
You know, like, sponsored
shift
by
your branding a little bit.
Sponsored by David's Bridal.
Speedos in the Snow.
Room wear.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
So it's April 3rd, 2002. It's Alyssa's 18th birthday. And this is so heartbreaking because Sarah's like, all Alyssa wanted was to be free of my dad. And that would happen when she's 18. So now that she's 18, like, oh my God, this broke my heart. Like, she's going to come home now, right? Or like, she'll talk to me again, right?
And like, this is the day that Sarah's been waiting for.
And so Alyssa's been gone a year now, right? And she's and Sarah's kind of like doing all the cool things that Alyssa used to do.
She's
so
wearing
that,
Alyssa's clothes.
And like kind of experimenting the way Alyssa was and listening to the same music and stuff. So that like Sarah's hope is that, well, when my sister comes back when she's 18, she'll think I'm like the coolest kid around like I thought she was. And it's
It's so heartbreaking.
But also Sarah's saying that she's self-medicating because of the grief and the trauma. And honestly, who can blame her?
Yeah. And well, also, the dad is further traumatizing Sarah by saying, look, any number of horrible things could have happened to her. She could have been sex trafficked.
Don't do that, parents.
She could have been killed.
Don't say that to your kids.
No, and like no good parent would ever do that. Like,
right.
He's just trying to plant any seeds in her mind so she's not thinking my dad killed her.
But here's another major red flag because, you know, remember how her dad was telling, and we'll get into it, telling everyone on earth that Alyssa's so bad, she's doing this.
Yeah.
Now, when Sarah starts experimenting with substances or self-medicating, Mike, the dad, who talks shit about Alyssa left, right, and center, is helping Sarah self-medicate. So she goes, I'm anxious. He gave me a blue pill. I'm sad. I got an orange pill.
Yeah.
So the dad, not only were they not actually talking about the problems, he was helping Sarah not be sober in any way or coherent.
Well,
and
right, because the more sober she is, the more questions she might ask.
But also, like, but I thought Alyssa was bad for doing this.
Yeah.
So it's like, what was his role in what Alyssa was doing? Was Alyssa even doing any of this at all?
Right.
Was this all in her head? Like,
or like anything beyond what any normal teenager does?
What any normal 16, right.
Yeah.
Like,
my guess is no. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So we start to meet Alyssa's friends, Charity and Sarah and Renee. But Charity says
Michael was very protective of Alyssa. So when she ran away, her father had called my house looking for her. That's how I found out that she had gone missing. For the most part, we hung out at my house because she wanted to get away from her home as much as she could.
We were always hanging out at my house because Alyssa never wanted to be at her house.
And this is when everyone starts saying that the dad was really protective of Alyssa. This is not the right word. I know the friends are doing the right thing. I'm not blaming the friends. But everyone is saying he was really, really protective of her when really he was abusing her and isolating her.
I mean, Jessica says, like, the father calls Jessica, like, yelling at her.
Yeah.
She's like, you must know where Alyssa is, blah, blah, blah. And Jessica's like, honestly, between us here, if it's just me, you, and the camera, there was a part of her and all of Alyssa's friends that were kind of psyched that Alyssa finally got away from this nightmare of a father, because like we're seeing again the camera was in their faces 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people film prom, the prom night, yes. like the parents want, but this is like next level. But there's footage of Alyssa's father. All the kids are there. Everyone's dressed up.
They're all at Alyssa's house. They're all like waiting for the limo. They're about to go.
She's in her prom dress. Her hair's done. And from behind the camera, he's like,
Alyssa, I changed my mind. You can't hear me.
Why?
Because I just changed my mind.
Why?
Because I said no.
What are you talking about?
I said you can't go. But you look nice.
You're right. I am going all through this just to not be able to go.
I know. Oh my gosh. Are you kidding me?
No.
And he lets her go.
Yeah.
But the point is that it's very possible for him to actually make good on that threat.
In front of all of her friends as she's walking out the door in her full, like, hair, makeup, outfit.
But, like, this is fun for him.
Yes, yes. And you know how I always say that I hate dads? Because this is the shit that, like, shitty dads do.
Yeah.
You never know if they're kidding. You can't talk back to them. She can't flip out on him like she probably wants to, because then he's going to lose his temper and make good on it.
But then there's footage of it, and yeah. then she's the crazy one.
Exactly. Can we take a quick second to talk about how Jessica and Alyssa met?
Yeah.
They met because Alyssa came to high school wearing a Care Bear t-shirt.
Yep.
And Jessica was really pissed because she's the one that
wears... Care Bears were her thing.
Care Bears were her thing. And she kind of like went up to Alyssa to like give her shit about it. And within seconds, they were best friends.
And then she was like, oh, it's our thing.
It's our thing.
Then they became best friends.
I was like, Care Bear t-shirts were definitely a thing at one point.
Yeah. But the dad was also calling everyone's parents and like yelling at the parents about what Alyssa can and can't do. Very intense and weird.
And my note here is like, I dare one of Daisy's friends to pull that shit with me. We're gonna hear at some point later that like there was a party at Charity's and the dad made Charity's parents sign a contract
like, fuck off.
That boys wouldn't be there. Not only would I tell the parents to fuck off, I would get that kid alone and be like, what is going on at your house? Tell me everything.
What is this?
This is not normal. This is not okay. And once again, I am not blaming anybody for anything. The killer is the killer. But let us be a small voice in the world of learning not to normalize crazy behavior, because so many people normalize his truly crazy red flaggy behavior. I'm talking about the adults. I'm talking about the parents who are seeing this shit. I'm talking about the cops that we're going to talk to in a little bit.
The teachers.
The kids, I'm not holding any of the children accountable. But the parents who are getting a contract for what my daughter is allowed to do at a party.
That's crazy.
Ask some fucking questions.
That's crazy.
Yes.
Like even Renee, one of the friends, says that
Mike was a totally different person when Barbara was still alive. And after Barbara died, he sort of became more and more obsessive. Mike always talked about how bad Alyssa was. She was always being grounded. It was so, like, toxic.
This is where Renee uses the word toxic, and I'm like, yeah. But in addition to that, like we were saying before, Alyssa was always treated like a problem.
Yes.
She was always, Sarah describes it as she was like a fire that couldn't be contained. She was out of control. She was doing bad shit, and I have to be this way because she's so bad.
But like,
big bad Alyssa.
People only ever hear about the behavior. They never actually see it.
Getting some wine coolers on prom night or whatever.
And one other thing I want to say about the friends, Charity is here to tell us that at the end of the school year, the dad forbid Alyssa from ever seeing Charity ever again for no reason other than the fact that, like Sarah's gonna say later, dad did not want her to have any friends. He didn't want her to have anybody to go to
because she can trust Charity.
Exactly.
Charity was a safe space.
And it's hard. At some point, Charity pulls out like a box of letters that Alyssa was writing to her in the mail, even though Charity lived across town.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And also, for the record, I don't give a shit if Alyssa was experimenting with things more than weed and booze. I don't really give a shit.
Right. It's called being a parent. You deal with it like could it be that your kid is a problem because her fucking mother just died and you never addressed it with her?
Yeah.
You never got her any mental health services?
All you're doing is shoving a camera in her face 24 hours a day?
I don't believe it. I really don't believe it. I think she was a normal teenager. She had good days, she had bad days, but like this problem that he's like over the top problem that he's telling everybody
she was. If she was doing drugs to self-medicate, I wonder why.
Exactly.
The end.
Exactly.
But here's the thing. Mike, the dad, was fucking obsessed. He filmed everything. And I hate this so much because Alyssa would wake up and he'd shove a camera in her face and she's angrily telling him to turn the camera off and he's laughing at her.
Like in some of these videos, you can tell that she's going along with it because it's easier to just not have the fight. But as the documentary progresses, and they did such a good job with this, the more we see these home videos of Alyssa, the sadder and sadder she looks. Like at some point, she doesn't even know she's being filmed. He's just filming. filming her, and she looks despondent.
She looks despondent. And he, the more despondent she is, the more of a kick he gets out of it. And that makes me
crazy.
And
we're going to know, like, in her, I'm going to sob talking about this. We know as the viewer, in her mind, she's being sexually abused, she's being verbally abused, she's being physically abused, and she sees no way out. She's like 15, 16 in these videos, and in her head, she's trapped in a prison she cannot ever leave.
And it's also, he's telling everyone and her that she's a fucking crazy nightmare.
Stupid. He's
so
calling her stupid.
Any reaction she has on camera is evidence that he can show somebody.
Yep.
So think about that. The walking on eggshells, when you're in an abusive relationship of any kind, the walking on eggshells is just ubiquitous.
Yes.
But add to that this extra feeling of being watched and recorded and documented, that if you react in a very real way to what you're feeling, it's like, oh, gotcha.
Yep.
Oh,
see, there it is.
Like,
yeah. And we learn now that in addition to all of the videos that he's taking, he's now also recording every incoming and outgoing phone call in the house.
For, quote, protection.
Yes.
But it doesn't stop there, dear listener.
The day that my dad told me about the video camera in the vent, he said, I got a new camera. This is to watch your sister to make sure she doesn't get in trouble. Don't tell her. He was just watching every move she made.
He's putting up cameras in the house and outside the house. And Sarah's like, at the time, she goes, I thought that made us fancy.
Yes.
Because she's like, remember, I'm a kid. Like, that's what rich people have, right?
Yes.
Like, how cool is that? We have a security system.
Well, and it would be one thing to have, like, a camera on the outside of your house. He then shows Sarah that he's hiding a camera in the vent pointed at the living room so he can, quote, keep an eye on Alyssa. And, like, now he's, like, playing Sarah against Alyssa because he's like, she's a problem. You can't tell her about this camera, but you know that it's there, but you can't ever tell her about it.
And then that makes Sarah feel like, oh, I'm on the good side.
Dad
My
and I are on a team.
That's it.
Yeah.
So Alyssa gets a job at the local Jack in the Box.
Yeah.
Her father would literally stalk her. So he'd sit outside her job, and we have all of this footage. He'd like, from the car.
Yes.
Film her and like zoom in on her as she's like cooking the french fries.
Another example of people making excuses for this. The manager gets mad at the dad because he thinks it's weird and creepy, but does nothing about it. If you are the manager of a restaurant and you have a 16-year-old girl working for you, and there's any person, I don't care if it's her parent or anybody, sitting in a car in the parking lot filming her, that person is unsafe.
And maybe he did. We don't know if he did or didn't.
Yeah, like, I guess.
But we see Alyssa on camera.
Yes.
Like at the window of the car. Like she goes into the parking lot and she's like,
you got me in trouble, Dad.
How'd I do that?
Because that freaking asshole Mike, he looks and he goes, that's illegal. He can't do that. And I was like, that's my dad.
Which one's Mike? The one I was talking to you?
Everyone in there is mad, and he's like, who's mad? And she's like, but the bigger thing here is that he's just causing problems for her with every dynamic and every relationship she has.
Because a job is a step out the door. A job is her making her own money and not needing him for that.
Or
a job
seeing,
is like a pathway to freedom for her.
Right. Or hearing like, wait, you don't have cameras in your, or wait, your father doesn't record. Oh, wait, like being out in the real world is a very dangerous thing.
100%.
So this is what he was doing, and he wasn't hiding any of it. Like making the parents sign contracts and filming her everywhere.
You know,
like everyone was aware. So when she finally is gone, when people heard she, quote, ran away, they were like, you know what?
I know.
Good for her.
And, you know, Sarah's going to say towards the end of the documentary, everyone in every institution failed her.
Everybody.
Adult who signed a contract about a party, or every boss who didn't call the fucking cops on the creepy dad filming the kid, everyone failed her.
Everybody.
And again, I'm only speaking to the adults. I'm not talking about the kids in her life.
Right.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Bachelor Happy Hour. I'm Joe.
And I'm Serena.
And we are here with the iHeart Music Awards and David's Bridal,
who are sponsoring this podcast. And we are so grateful to them.
Thank you. Thank you for finishing my sentence. And we are here with our favorites, Dotton and Charity.
Where were you in Bikinis in the Snow?
Montana.
Okay. She flew out and joined you guys.
Yeah. Isn't it cold?
No, it was.
Bikinis in the Snow.
We risk getting hypothermia for those photos.
Wow.
They were sick, though.
I don't get Bikinis in the Snow.
Like it's like, just it's like an aesthetic. Little,
yeah,
I don't know.
If him and I did that, if we did like Speedos in the Snow, you guys would be like douchebags. Like,
no, I wouldn't.
Well, Speedos
would not,
in the Snow would be hilarious.
Really?
I would be like, let's see it. Like, come on. I would not complain. I'd beg him to do stuff like that. He's like, no.
That's going to be the name of this podcast episode. Bachelor Happy Hour, Speedos in the Snow.
David's Bridal, if you're listening.
With David's Bridal.
I mean, yeah, sponsored
shift
by
your branding a little
sponsored
bit.
Sponsored by David's Bridal.
David's Bridal, Speedos in the Snow.
Room wear.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
So while everyone's like, hooray, she's away from that creep, everything comes to a screeching halt when they think for two more seconds and they're like, wait a second.
Yeah.
She never would have left Sarah alone. No way.
Exactly.
No way. And she wouldn't have left her phone and she wouldn't be like calling Charity to hang out. Like, she's not doing the things that she would have been doing if she really just got out from under his thumb.
Right. So now we meet Detective William Anderson. He inherited Alyssa's case in 2008. By this point, she's been gone for 7 years.
He confirms that the cops don't give a shit about runaways.
They've been literally doing absolutely nothing on the case.
Especially if they leave a note like Alyssa did and the 5 a.m. phone call. This just confirms that she's in the wind and we shouldn't care about
it. But Anderson is here to say, I'm taking another look at this because
she's never contacted any of her family members, never contacted any of her friends. Honestly, I'm having trouble with a teenage girl cutting all ties with everybody she's ever known. That just doesn't happen.
Teenage girls don't do that.
And also, that phone call would have been recorded, that 5 a.m. phone call, because the dad records everything. Because Sarah says, you pick up the phone, it's an audible, however he rigged it, is that the phone records everything. And I'm like, can't wait to hear that 5 a.m. phone call.
Exactly.
Girl.
And so in 2008, Detective Anderson calls Sarah, and like out of the blue, she's like, oh my God, it's been 7 years since I've heard from anybody. He asked her to come down to the station for her first and only ever formal interview on the case.
Sarah is 19 years old at this point.
And we see this interview. And you know, Sarah, in this interview, is basically just regurgitating all of the things that she's been told all of her life that she learned as a kid, and she just absolutely believed that Alyssa was a bad kid. She was bad to the dad. She did stupid stuff. Like, she'd get in cars with boys and just, like, take off with strange boys and not knowing. Sarah never saw this behavior.
No, but Sarah was told this when she's 12 and now recounting it 7 years later.
Yeah, and it's like, Sarah's sort of air in this interview is like, I miss my sister and I love her and I want her to come home. But, like, it makes sense. She was living a dangerous lifestyle. So it kind of makes sense that she's gone.
Also, remember the 7 years of brainwashing from her father, the two of them against the world.
Yes. And also, Anderson, the cop, says it's the leaving of the cell phone that is like the biggest red flag to him, because he's like, I've never seen a single other case where a teenager had a cell phone and would do that. I wanted to point out, it was the very, very, very early 2000s when she went missing. I didn't get my first cell phone until 2001. And even then, I didn't always have my phone on me. You know what I mean?
Oh, I mean, like, we've talked about it before. I think it was Lacey Peterson, like her phone was in the car.
Yeah,
and we had to be like, dear listener,
it
wasn't the same thing because people had like landlines.
And all I'm saying is that the dad was just too dumb to throw the phone away. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or like maybe he thought like if she had her phone, we could track the phone. So we've got to leave it here because, you know.
Yeah, I guess.
The cell phone, you know, I'm very grateful for the cell phone because it's the big red flag that makes the cops take a second
look. Because the stories are not aligning for me because the whole like, you know, fuck you, dad. I'm leaving for California, whatever. But like, it's not fuck you everyone I've ever met.
Exactly.
It's a Mike the dad specific grievance.
Yes.
So why would she just like cut off everyone? That makes zero sense.
Yeah. And you know, Anderson is asking Sarah about the relationship between Alyssa and her dad. And Sarah's like, he was definitely overprotective, you know, but he was overprotective because she was making poor choices.
Now it's 2008, right? Alyssa's been missing for 7 years. Now Detective Anderson is on the case. He wants to talk to the father.
Mike declines to do a formal interview. And that's fine. I still have him on the phone. He's still relatively cooperative. Mike was all about the cop talk. He introduced himself as former law enforcement. He's so happy that we're paying attention to this.
He's very happy that they're looking into this, but I'm not going to sit down with you for it.
As John Oliver would say, cool.
Right.
Like, fuck off.
Well, and quickly, the dad wants to point to a suspect.
Oh, well, okay. So Mike, the dad, tells the cops to look at Alyssa's abusive ex-boyfriend, John.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? We're just now learning about
John?
We're
just learning about John.
Egg on my face. Right. This is a nothing burger. Mike, the dad, of course, has video from the day before Alyssa, quote, left.
Taken at the house on surveillance.
His, now, like, homemade surveillance.
Right. Detective Anderson is initially very excited about this.
Right. But, like, in 2 seconds, you realize that Mike, the dad, has edited this together.
Yeah.
Because he hands the cops a tape.
Yeah.
And it's switching rooms and points of view.
Right.
So
yeah.
Mike the dad edited this together. God knows what he left out. But here's what the edited video shows. We start in the garage. Alyssa and John, the boyfriend, leave the house through the garage and walk off camera. Then only Alyssa comes back into frame, and she, with all of her might, like throws this cordless phone against the wall and it breaks.
Yeah. Which my immediate thought was like, you're going to be in so much trouble. Like, you just broke the phone. Like, oh my God.
Oh my God.
When you have like a terrifying, scary dad, like I would walk around the house on eggshells.
Yeah. So then though, it jumps. This is the editing.
Yeah.
It jumps to the camera inside the vent, and Alyssa is crying on the couch. It's obvious that she just got in a fight with
and
John.
You can hear John in his car screeching away outside.
Now, my thing is, like, hey, detective, you're going to ask about the vent camera, no?
So that's my note, because Detective Anderson is thrilled about this video. He thinks this shows that obviously it's got to be the boyfriend. I'm like, you're the vent camera is not a red flag to you, girl?
Because, dear listener, it's literally through the vent.
You see the slats in the vent.
Like, yeah. It's a hidden camera
exactly.
in his home.
It's not a security camera inside the house. It is a hidden camera.
It's not like you called some company and they... No.
This is not simply safe.
He just got a bunch of camcorders.
Yes.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like,
the battery expense alone on that.
I mean, my God. But no one asks about this.
Right.
I mean, at least we're not told that anyone asks.
Yeah. And Detective Anderson does not take a minute here to say, that was weird, but...
What a major fucking glaring red flag that there's a camera in a vent.
I know.
Why? And
I know.
Why are you editing? Just give us all the footage you have.
Exactly.
Why are you giving us a fully formed edited video that you yourself edited?
Yes.
And you won't talk to us, but you have this for 7 years ago? Like, what?
Right. Well, so they track down John, the boyfriend, because right now he's looking pretty good for this disappearance, right? So they bring him in. Remember, it's been 7 years since Alyssa disappeared. And Detective Anderson is saying this guy was very cooperative. He's telling them he met Alyssa at school. They were together for the entire year. There was never any violence between them ever. Like, the look on his face when he's asked about, like, was there ever, like,
right.
he flinches.
He was like, also, she just bailed. Like,
he's like, I'm the hurt one. She's like left me. I feel like I was broken up with and then never heard from her again.
And I'm like, oh, yet another person she would have called.
Exactly.
And he's like honest. He's open. They say no signs of deception, which I'm like, kind of means nothing to me. But I believe John.
But
I believe him.
John, importantly, does not know about the video.
Because I'm like, yeah, John, yeah, nice story, bro.
Right. Yeah.
Why are you fighting on the video? Why am I staring at a broken phone and a crying Alyssa and you peeling off? Like, what happened? John's like, Jillian, if you shut up for 2 seconds, I'll explain.
He would never talk to you like that. No violence.
And it's okay if he did, because this is all, we're all very heated. We're all at 100.
Yeah, true.
We need cooler heads to start prevailing, but not now. So here's what happened. John goes over to Alyssa's house, and before he can get to Alyssa, I don't know, they were hanging out. I don't know what they were going to do. Mike, the dad, goes, hey, chief.
Hey.
Confronts him and says,
and Mike told him, she's cheating on you with a guy from work. John obviously reacted poorly to that. He confronted Alyssa, and then he stormed out of the house. He's describing that event.
Alyssa's cheating on you. It's some guy from work.
Yeah.
I know this because I have cameras everywhere.
Yes.
I have footage of them making out. And I'm thinking this is another relationship. He's trying to ruin Alyssa's life.
Of course.
Like, he's just trying to blow. Like, why would you do this?
He's just trying to completely isolate her. Yeah. And do you know what I keep thinking about, honestly, is Alyssa's poor mother in heaven.
I know,
like, you know what I mean? Like, you married this guy. You think, like, you're, you know, her final days must have been fucking torture for her.
I know.
But at least I've got this great guy who's going to take care of my
and
girls.
And, like, this big, happy family.
Yeah,
like,
thank
Sarah
God
calls
for that.
Them the Brady Bunch at one point, you know?
And, like, what made him turn so crazy? Because he wasn't like this, at least that we know of, when his wife was alive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Ugh. Anyway, sorry.
It's fine. So the cops have the same question of, like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And that's when everyone kind of realizes, like, oh, this entire fight was incited by Michael Turney.
Yes.
Like, he started this fight, and John, and I'm like, why? And John is like, wait. Like, that's kind of, hold on a second.
Right.
Because after John hears all of that, he goes, well, her stupid stepdad did something ridiculously terrible. That's the quote.
Yes.
That's the on-screen text.
And
that we
just
get.
Remember, fam, that the stepdad is the dad. It's the same.
It's Mike Turney. It's the bad guy, the killer.
Yeah.
So John, the boyfriend, says Michael Turney took Alyssa for a drive.
Pulled over somewhere in, you know, an unoccupied area, something like the desert area, and tried fooling around with her, and she got, you know, aggressive, fighting about it.
He is basically telling the cops that this guy tried to assault or assaulted Alyssa, yeah. sexually assaulted Alyssa in a car.
Exactly. The same guy who then orchestrated the breakup with the boyfriend.
With the edited video and the vent camera and all this crazy shit.
This is major news. Like basically, this is evidence of sexual assault. So then Detective Anderson then reaches out to every single person Alyssa Turney has ever met. Teachers, friends, cousins, every single
former
person.
Former babysitters, coworkers.
Yes. And everybody is telling him the exact same. Alyssa was telling everybody that this happened.
This specific story of her being assaulted by her father in the car.
Yes.
And at one point, like Jessica, Rhett, who's Alyssa's brother, by the way, and Charity, the friend, has the same story, only her version is much more violent.
Or it's another instance of the abuse.
Where Michael Turney is strangling Alyssa and is suffocating her and is on top of her.
Right. So I think these are two separate incidents. I think there's the truck incident where he sexually assaults her in the car. And then there's another incident where he's on top of her, choking her, gagging her, and sexually assaulting her.
And Charity says he told Alyssa, like, don't tell anyone because no one's going to believe you anyway.
Exactly.
And Charity also says that Alyssa begged Charity not to say anything for Sarah.
Right.
Alyssa didn't want something to happen where Alyssa's taken away from the family or Sarah's at risk or they are separated in some way. So Alyssa stayed quiet to protect Sarah.
Which I gotta tell you would probably have happened. As a foster parent, an underage Alyssa reporting the father, they would have taken the kids away. Hopefully Alyssa and Sarah would have stayed together. But we don't know. And all Alyssa can think, I mean, probably what would have happened is they would have gone to Aunt Teresa. But of course, Alyssa has no way of knowing that.
Right, and she doesn't want to leave Sarah alone with her
father. Right, or if the dad is saying, we're going to learn later, the dad made her sign documents saying that these things never happened. No one's going to believe you. She believes no one's going to believe
her. She's completely isolated.
She's got to be there to save Sarah.
100%. So now, the cops are like, okay, Mike, the dad, we need all of your footage. We need all of it. The vent camera, the this, especially from the days leading up to and including when Alyssa went missing.
Yeah.
I ask Mike if he can provide me with that tape. Mike kind of hems and haws. He's not sure if he still has that one. He'll have to look around for it. I consider that odd because it's the last day your child was seen alive. That's something that you keep.
Oh, I probably don't have it. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
You're not watching them on a loop every single day to see if you miss something or if there's any shred of evidence as to why she's gone?
And thank God, Anderson is saying the same thing. He knows him not having it, readily available to bring to the cops is a major red flag.
And a bigger red flag is that the cops also want that 5 a.m. phone call.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, we don't have it.
And guess who's suddenly being less cooperative with his best friend Anderson?
Guess.
Mike the dad.
Of course.
Yeah.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Bachelor Happy Hour. I'm Joe.
And I'm Serena.
And we are here with the iHeart Music Awards and David's Bridal,
who are sponsoring this podcast. And we are so grateful to them.
Thank you. Thank you for finishing my sentence. And we are here with our favorites, Dotton and Charity.
Where were you in bikinis in the snow?
Montana.
Okay. She flew out and joined you guys.
Yeah. Isn't it cold?
No, it was...
It's bikinis in the snow.
We risk getting hypothermia for those photos.
Wow.
They were sick, though.
I don't get bikinis in the snow.
It's an aesthetic. Little, yeah, I don't know.
If him and I did that, if we did Speedos in the snow, you guys would be like douchebags.
No, I wouldn't.
Well, Speedos in the snow would be hilarious.
Really?
I would be like, let's see it. Come on. I would not complain. I'd beg
folks.
Him to do stuff like that. He's like, no.
That's going to be the name of this podcast episode, Bachelor Happy Hour Speedos in the Snow.
David's Bridal, if you're listening.
With David's Bridal.
Sponsored by branding a little.
Sponsored by David's Bridal.
Speedos in the snow.
Roomware.
So it's December 11th, 2008. Alyssa's been missing for over 7 years, and the cops call Sarah down to the station.
Girl, we've got breaking news in the case.
And they're like, this is going to come as a major shock.
Yeah, they don't have breaking news in the case.
No.
They got to get her out of the house.
They say, so we have warrants to search your house. It's actually happening right now.
Yeah.
And also, P.S., we're taking your father into custody because we need evidence from him. So we're not arresting him yet, but just an FYI.
And he's also like the main suspect in the case.
And the cops say to her, they spell it out. They're like, we wanted you out of the house because we didn't want you there when this happened, but here's what's happening.
But now Sarah's sobbing because remember back in 2008, Sarah is her dad's biggest defender. Absolutely no way he could have done
it. It's the two of them against the world.
Yep, she didn't even know they were ever even looking at him. They've got something. Why would they? Right, exactly.
All her father wanted to do was protect Alyssa. Yes. Alyssa was in trouble.
And finally, Alyssa has been his life's work since she went missing.
So,
and Sarah is sobbing. She just wants to get out of there to get back to the house to be with her dad.
Meanwhile, Dr. Erin Nelson is here, and I love her. She's a forensic psychologist, and the cops cops are waiting for the dad to leave the house.
Yes.
Now, this guy, it's a normal day.
And the reason they're waiting for him to leave is because this guy's got fucking guns forever.
Well, here's the thing. It's just a normal, it's a Tuesday morning at 9:30, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He goes to check his mail. The SWAT team descends upon him.
Yeah.
Here's what he's carrying while he's walking
just
to the
check
mailbox.
The mail.
Again, he has no idea this is happening. Yeah, Sarah, yeah. Like, he's just going to the mailbox. I'm stressing that because yeah. Here's what he has on his person to get the fucking junk mail and the circular.
Yeah. Right.
He was equipped with multiple firearms, knives, and a recording device that he had donned. All just to make that walk from the front door to the mailbox.
And a recording device. And I'm like, walking to the mailbox? And Dr. Aaron's like, yeah, girl.
Yeah, girl, I know.
Walking to the, this is who we're dealing with here.
This is just unbelievable. They say they're looking for the security tapes that would have Alyssa on them, either the audio or the video, they say. But what we found was so much more.
And I'm like what?
This is insane. There are guns everywhere.
They say
shotguns.
Massive, quote, yeah. Massive amount of weapons.
Shotguns, rifles, pistols. They say the place is an epic mess. Mm-hmm. The man does not know how to clean. He's basically a hoarder. Thousands of video and audio recordings.
A wealth of ammunition for, quote, everything possible.
Yeah. Well, on one of the videos they find, it's a video of him having sex with a woman who's bound and gagged, which just furthers, like, the charity story about, like, he was doing that to Alyssa, too.
And I'm like, is this a, but who is she? Is this
right.
consensual? Is he assaulting her?
Right,
like
right.
what? Because there are Polaroids. There are thousands, and I mean thousands, of VHS tapes and cassettes. He recorded absolutely everything. But like weird.
Yes.
That like the day Alyssa goes missing,
yeah.
gone. The 5 a.m. phone call, gone.
If only I knew.
Wouldn't you like, oh my God,
of course.
Ooh, do I even have that?
I mean,
you're asking me now.
Right.
It's you're the last time. Weren't you begging and pleading your daughter?
Like, it's she like 2008. You'd have it digitized. You'd have it like on a thumbnail. You'd have it readily available.
You'd be the crazy person who's just playing it on a
yes.
loop trying to find a clue that you probably missed.
Yes,
like,
yes.
Give me a break.
100%.
So when you add all of this to what Alyssa's friends were saying, like assaulted, threatened,
yes.
choked, strangled, you're like, who is this woman?
Yes.
Has he been doing this before? But we're not done.
No, because then they find the fucking pipe bombs.
And then we look towards an old van that's in the backyard. The van appears to be full of trash upon first inspection. But then you take a closer look, it becomes very apparent that the van itself is a bomb.
They think it's just full of trash.
Yes.
And no, the van itself is a bomb. And I'm like, Sarah was living here?
I know. Within the van, there's propane, bleach, and nails in the wheel well.
And everyone, in case you're wondering, there's a plan for
this. Yeah. Well, they get into his safe and they find thumb drives in envelopes to be mailed to NBC, ABC, CNN, all the major news networks with his manifesto.
His manifesto,
yeah.
The Diary of a Madman. His fucking manifesto. So remember how he was an electrician?
Yes.
This is all about all the bombs. The manifesto is all about how he was treated poorly by the union
right.
and everyone was trying to kill him. It's
yeah.
a cult-like environment. In fact, the union kidnapped Alyssa and they took her to California and they killed her.
And they killed her.
And so the plan is to drive the van that is a bomb.
A bomb.
Into the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Union Hall and kill everyone.
Like,
and I'm like, does he even believe this shit? Is this like a weird
this
cover-up?
This is when you're just like, when did he become this? Because he raised those boys, then met Sarah's mom,
the
married
boys
her.
That want nothing to do with him.
Right. I mean, it's like, when did he crack? When did this happen?
I mean, it's been 7 years since he killed Alyssa.
Yeah.
I think this is a very slow burn. And he's... When, you know, isolating your victims is one thing, but that means you're also isolating yourself
yes.
and you're in your own echo chamber of crazy.
Uh-huh.
And like,
uh-huh.
I think, you know what I mean? Like
100%.
I think it's a mutual fucked up situation here where like, he's not in reality either.
Uh-huh.
The way he's shielding Sarah from the real world means he's shielding himself even more.
The idea, I'm making this number up, but the idea that he was going to go kill all of those people, if that had happened, I'm guessing in 2008, it would have been like the greatest like example of domestic terror since 9/11.
I mean, it would have been. I can't believe Sarah was living in a house with an actual ticking bomb.
Yeah,
in the
I know.
Driveway.
Like
and
a
many other
propane.
Ones.
Oh my God, it's terrifying. They find 29 pipe bombs in total.
He is arrested for the possession of the explosives, but we're never able to find the security video from May 17th of 2001 or the early morning phone call from that payphone.
They're never able to find the security video from the day that she went missing or the phone call from that call from California.
And like, no shit, right?
Yeah.
But that means that Michael Turney was the last person to see Alyssa because yes. he picked her up from school.
Yep. And in his own telling, he dropped her off at home and like went on his way for the day. But that still makes him the And Anderson, the detective, was like, we don't believe any of the rest of the story. We believe he killed, like, we believe that he was the last person to see her. We don't believe this phone call ever happened.
Of course.
Yeah.
Or
like the phone call happened, but it wasn't her. We see the phone record for the phone call. So we believe, and we can get more on this from Sarah, but we believe there actually was a phone call from Riverside. Was it like a prank call that worked in his favor? Did he hide or somebody
that's,
to do it?
That's my question. Was it just like the stars aligned for him yeah. where there was some like
a
wrong number
right.
or missed call at 5 a.m. from a payphone in Riverside, California?
It has to have been orchestrated somehow. Yeah.
But with who?
Right. Who knows?
Like,
we're gonna
ask Sarah.
We're going to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah. I have so many questions about the call. I even wrote I'm such a nerd. I have my little like handwritten notebook like next to my computer.
Oh, yeah.
Because I have notes apps and I have alarm. I have so many things going on. But for Sarah's interview, I want like things I can
totally.
Easily. So as I was watching, I'm doing my notes that I'm using here, but also my like handwritten.
I
crazy.
Know. I have mine too.
And it's like so many questions about the 5 a.m. phone call. I'm like scribbling it. I'm like Kermit at the typewriter, that gif. I'm just like, but back to Sarah. She's shocked. Her father's been arrested. And she says, look, I know the house looks crazy
yes.
and whatever. But
it's the only reality she's ever known. It doesn't look that crazy to her.
And she says, like,
growing up, there were always guns in my house. That was my normal. And when I heard about his plan to hurt all these people, I really thought that it was some fantasy writing of his. And my dad told me that the Phoenix Police Department planted those pipe bombs.
And her dad tells her that the cops planted the pipe bombs. She believes it. She believes it because she has to believe it. This is what I always think about people in these situations.
And I'm sure he was like, Sarah, one day they're going to come. And
yes.
when they do,
yes.
like, here's what happened. And his manifesto, he told her, he's just getting his emotions out.
Yep.
He's just like a journal.
Well, thank God he's sentenced to 10 years. He goes to prison.
For the pipe bombs and
yes.
all that. Crazy
so
shit.
Sarah says, you know, she was just starting college when this happened, and this turns her life upside down. Suddenly, she's got to take over the responsibility of the house and the three dogs, but at the same time, she's like his biggest supporter.
And most vocal.
Yes, she makes a website for him, she's going on TV, she circulates a petition, she fully believes he was wrongfully convicted.
We see footage, Sarah is on the news
yeah.
talking about how her father is being framed and he's wrongfully convicted.
And had nothing to do with Alyssa's murder or,
yeah.
or disappearance.
And it's because this, I'm sure she was prepped for this for the last 7 or
yes,
8 years.
Of course.
And this is her father. He would never do anything like this. You know, Alyssa had a very dangerous lifestyle.
Yes.
So she is here trying to keep together the only family she knows.
Meanwhile, cut to all the other friends and relatives that are in the documentary. They're like, oh, thank fucking God they finally got the guy who obviously did this.
Right.
You
and
know?
Meanwhile, Sarah has become what she calls his legal secretary.
Yeah.
She's given his power of attorney. I mean, real official
yes.
shit. It's the two of them against the world, just like he always told her it was going to be.
He's on the inside telling her, nobody loves you like how I love you. I'm the only person who can take care of you.
It's me and you, kid.
Yeah, that's it. It's us.
That's it. And
yeah.
like, this is, what did I say? I
yeah.
told you they were going to come for me and I told you this was going to happen. And look at us now. And no one, I mean, it's me and you, right? And
yeah.
Sarah's like, of course.
Of course.
Oh my God.
And this goes on for years.
And Sarah says she eventually gives the house back to the bank. Sarah graduates college. She buys her own home. And then eventually, Sarah kind of like, something, because this always happens.
Because because she's not isolated by him anymore.
Right. And like, something kind of starts to shake loose for Sarah.
Yeah.
And she realizes, like, his mask starts to fall, but she's asking some questions, and she's like,
my dad just wasn't interested in anything but himself. You know, he let me go bankrupt, paying for things like him to have a TV in prison, to constantly send him hundreds and hundreds of dollars in commissary money. It didn't matter how many hours I put into working for him, how much of my money I gave to him. It was very clear that he didn't care about my well-being.
Prison is fucking expensive.
Is it really?
Yes. And Sarah is paying for all of it. And
yeah.
her father is totally fine because he needs to watch his stories.
He does not care.
His daughter, it's them against the world,
yeah.
the only one he really loves and trusts and vice versa. And she has nowhere to live because he needs a television.
Right, exactly. And she says, it became clear to her that the only person he cared about was himself.
Nothing was enough. The work, the money, the petitions,
yeah.
going on the news. And I'm like, because it never is. And she's starting to get that.
Then she runs into Jessica Lange at a record store. The best friend of Alyssa, the Care Bear friend from high school.
Yeah, who's right next to me combing through. Do they have any Fiona Apple B-sides here?
You guys gotta win the pawn.
I mean, I was in a record store not that long ago. I was in upstate New York with Mike and our friends Damien and Lori, and I went right to the Fiona Apple section.
Oh my God.
Empty.
It was 20 years ago this week, I believe, that album
came out.
Yeah.
But I went right to the
Paper Bag came on the radio the other day, and I thought of you.
Really?
It's my favorite Fiona Apple
song.
It's
so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. So anyway, Jessica and Sarah meet up. It's been years.
Yes.
And Sarah is like, oh my God, Jessica, like,
yeah.
How are you? Sarah is super excited to see Jessica. And Jessica is just
doesn't
like, girl,
skip a beat.
You know your father killed your sister, right?
I mean, just like, thank God for the brutal honesty. Somebody had to say it.
And Sarah goes, no, he didn't.
Right.
But like, it sticks with her. And
yeah.
Sarah's home with her boyfriend. And she's like, boyfriend? Nameless, we don't know
nameless
his name.
Boyfriend, yeah.
I turned to my boyfriend and I said to him, do you think my dad could have killed my sister? And he says, Sarah, everyone thinks your dad killed your sister.
Everyone thinks your dad killed your sister.
And something in that moment shifts
yeah.
in Sarah. Like the spell is broken. She starts kind of, she's like, oh.
Because the thing that I think works in Sarah's favor here is that she didn't have these people banging down the door screaming this at her for the last 5 years. She's had her shitty dad in prison who starts treating her like shit. Like you said, the mask has come off for him. So she's open. She's available to this kind of thinking.
Yeah. And people that she trusts are kind of like, girl, like,
yeah.
Because what is the motivation
right.
to lie about it? It's been all these years and it's
yeah.
like the writing's on the wall. Like, were you there when there was a van that was a bomb? Like,
yeah.
At the very least, he's not well, Sarah.
And she says this was the first moment she considered that her father wasn't telling the truth, and she was able to do it because for the first time in her life, she wasn't under his manipulation. Imagine she's at the record store, sees Jessica Lange, not that Jessica Lange. Mm-hmm. Jessica Lange says that
no
to
e.
her. She goes home. She's like, Dad, I ran into Jessica at the record store today, and like she's trying to convince me that you killed my sister. And
like,
but because he's not there and he's been such a dick to her,
well,
she's in that headspace where she can hear it.
It's like, well, I thought it was the two of us against the world, and
right.
now you're letting me go bankrupt, and
right.
now you're
yes.
doing this, and
yes.
now you're like being rude,
yes.
and like I'm doing all this work for you, and
because
it's never enough. What the fuck?
All of that awful shit is true about you. Could this also be true about you?
Well, and that's where we are. Because then Sarah starts using her powers for good.
Yes.
And all of the hard work and determination and the research and the organization and the passion that she was putting towards her father's case, now it's her sister's case.
Yes.
So she pulls out this enormous stack of papers.
Like, she pulls it out today to show the camera. This
yeah.
is Alyssa's file, and it is 2 feet thick.
She, like, calls Phoenix PD, and she's like,
yeah.
I'm over on the good side now.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm
yeah,
using
yeah.
my powers for
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
And so documents, reports, transcripts of interviews, transcripts of the video, all the shit that Sarah
documents,
didn't,
reports, receipts,
fucking receipts, everything.
Fucking everything.
So, but all the stuff that Sarah didn't know
yes.
because her father was keeping it from
right,
her.
Right, so there's transcripts of interviews with people she didn't even know were interviewed. There's
John, the boyfriend.
Yes, yes.
All this stuff, and she's like, wait a second.
Because this is where she learns about the sexual assault. She didn't know about that before.
Everything we've been screaming about for an hour,
yeah.
Sarah learns
yes.
in real time.
Yes.
And you have to imagine like the out of body, dry mouth,
yes.
adrenaline, insanity of, and then all of the things that she had experienced as a kid.
Yeah.
Now she's seeing in a different light and she's like, oh
well,
my God.
And the other big thing that the friend in the transcripts that she's reading, she's seeing that Alyssa only stayed to take care of her.
Which, and then the guilt
yes,
of that,
yes.
that Sarah has
which
amazingly worked
she
through.
She knows better now. Yeah, of course. You
but
know what
in
I mean?
The like, moment,
in the, of course.
How much can one person take? The hits
right.
just keep on coming.
Yeah.
Every time she turns the page, it's worse than the one before it. And then.
We got to talk about the third grade teacher.
I fucking hate this woman. So
know.
After her mother, Barbara, died,
yeah.
her father started dating Alyssa's third grade teacher.
Which conflict of interest. I don't
give
like
me a fucking
it
break.
On its face.
So, but Sarah's like, I loved her.
Yes.
Alyssa and I love this
right.
woman.
Right. You know what? These people needed like a sane adult in their life. Fine.
She, like the woman, the teacher should have known better.
Yeah.
But Sarah's like, I loved her. I loved her kids. Sarah says she was the closest thing to a stepmother we ever had.
Yes.
Now, in a 2009 interview with Alyssa's third grade teacher.
With the cops.
We learn.
She said to me, I didn't have sex with my dad. And I talked to her and I said, Alyssa, why are you saying now? Are you truly telling me this? Because if she told me, I would have called CPS or whatever. And she said, no, I'm not.
Alyssa told her, and I quote, I'm having sex with my dad.
Do we know how old Alyssa was at this point? Because she sounds like she was young.
Third grade.
Okay.
It's her third grade teacher.
Yeah.
So the teacher does the worst thing, which is, why would you say that? What do you mean?
Yes. And the teacher is telling us that she said that to her.
Right, because Dr. Aaron is like, you don't say that because that is a thing that would make a kid go, I don't know.
It
puts the kid on the defense. So there's no training from the teacher, which is a whole other set of problems that, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But the teacher says, teacher/girlfriend says...
Oh, and also mandatory reporter, I should add.
Which she fucking failed at.
Yeah.
Goes, why would you say that? And Alyssa goes, never mind. So the teacher decides to do nothing.
Yeah.
She doesn't make a phone call. Instead, she's dating the man Alyssa said was abusing her. The teacher, fucking pick me of the year, assumes that Alyssa said this because she's jealous of the teacher
and
dating her father.
And looking for attention.
This woman is a fucking idiot and honestly has blood on her hands.
I couldn't agree more. Like, I truly could not agree more. Because I'm sorry, if you're a mandatory reporter, you have to, whether you think it's true or not, if a kid reports that to you, you have to report
it. On earth.
This woman needs to lose her fucking license.
Why would a child say that?
I know. And also, like somebody says,
I can't imagine what it was like for Alyssa to build up all that courage to tell someone what was going on to just be dismissed.
The bravery it took for
Sarah
Alyssa to tell.
It.
Yes. Like how hard it would have been. It was drilled into Alyssa's head. You never tell. You never tell. You don't tell anybody. No one's going to believe you. They loved this woman.
Uh-huh.
She told her because she felt safe with her. And this woman betrayed her in the world. And I hope she's fucking listening.
And I hope she is too. And actually, fuck you. I don't want your listen.
Right.
But
I just wanted to listen to this one episode to hear this.
I'll send it right to her, just this part.
Totally.
How many other things did you not report?
Honest
you
to God.
You fucking idiot.
Yeah.
You stupid, heartless idiot.
Yeah.
To do that to, how can you hear a little girl say that to you?
Why are you a teacher?
And then you're going on dates?
I know.
With the guy she said it about? And her reasoning is, oh, she's jealous,
Of me?
Oh my God.
I know.
Blood on your hands, lady. And I'll say it to your fucking face.
Yeah.
So looking back though, because Sarah's reading this transcript, she didn't know anything about that.
Of course.
So she's looking back and now she's seeing everything in a different light.
Because as you were saying, like Sarah has watched all of the home videos a million times, but she one night puts one in that she's seen a million times and she's watching it again. It's a camping video in which Sarah is 8 and Alyssa is 12. And it's this thing where Sarah's got the recorder and the dad is telling her to turn it off. Now, like once again, Daisy's just like this. I don't want to turn it off. I want to keep recording.
Right.
No, Daisy, turn it off.
And it looks like a movie.
Yes.
I can't believe I'm watching it. And Sarah, like, her little face is so close to it because, like, she turns the camera on herself and it's, like, clumsy and clunky, like a little kid. And it's like, I know it's real, but it looks like if you filmed that, you'd be like, that's exactly, you know what
I
mean?
Yes, I do. And I think she's trying to make the dad think she turned it off when she didn't.
Uh-huh.
Because in the background, because the dad finally, lets it go for a second. And in the background.
Auto record.
Hit the red button.
Sarah. Auto record ye.
Dad's a pervert.
You hear Alyssa say, Sarah, dad is a pervert.
Because Alyssa is like several yards away. And we start hearing her go, Sarah.
Yeah.
And it's not like any urgency, Sarah.
Yeah.
And we hear her in the distance, like a total normal.
Yeah.
That's why I want to like slow down on this for a minute. Because she, like Sarah doesn't answer. She's fighting with her dad. But you hear Alyssa trying to get her attention.
Yep.
And then she says it again, Sarah. But again, it's not like Sarah, Sarah.
Yeah.
It's just like Sarah. And Sarah turns the camera around on Alyssa. And she's several yards away. And Alyssa just says, clear as day, dad's a pervert.
Yeah.
But again, not like, oh my God, we need to run.
Save me. Right. It's
Sarah.
Right.
Dad's a pervert.
Well, and because Sarah had just read all of the transcripts, she just learned about the sexual abuse in the file.
Right.
And so now she's hearing Alyssa say that and she's just like, oh my God.
Because we don't hear what Sarah says back. We don't hear if Alyssa says anything else because she says it pretty casually. We just see the dad grabbing the camera from Sarah and like turning off any record of this.
Yeah. This is where we start to see a little bit more of the videos. And this is where you start to see how sad and dejected Alyssa looks. Like it is so, knowing what we know, it is so hard to look at her in these videos.
And he really like runs the gamut. Like sometimes it's mean where he's like, oh, hey, look, proof, Alyssa can read.
Yeah.
Or sometimes he's, you know, threatening to pull the car over and spank her.
Yeah.
Or, you know, he's, do not leave that building whatsoever on prom night. And Alyssa saying like, turn off that stupid camera.
And he's filming her when she doesn't know he's filming her.
And like, she's in the pool.
Yeah.
Asking him to stop filming. And he's like, what? Stop what? It's so annoying.
It's the worst.
I mean, it's many things, but that whole like, what?
Yeah. And then we also see that he's like in public, like filming women without them knowing it.
Zooming
in on like their butts and stuff.
Or like he'll, he'll make it sound like he's filming like the landscape, but he's really being a creep towards women.
Yes.
Or like filming her friends at the beach.
And like, and again, like we get more of like how he's just filling Sarah's head with lies about Alyssa, that she's going around telling everybody the family secrets. Sarah says that's the term I heard all the time in my childhood, the family secrets.
And he's telling everyone, like all of her siblings, we hear recorded phone calls with the brothers.
Yes.
Like Alyssa's stupid. She has a bad memory.
She's a learning disorder.
She can't remember all of the rules of the house. So he has to write them on big poster boards and like leave them out when her friend, her like teenage friends come over just to embarrass her.
He's torturing her.
But he's planting seeds. Alyssa's bad. Alyssa's crazy. Alyssa's unreliable.
Right.
You can't trust a word she says.
Yes.
So Sarah though, now, so Sarah's like, oh my God, the light bulb goes off. The fucking chandelier goes off. And now Sarah starts telling people like Jessica and all, like, I changed my mind. Like
I believe,
oh my God. Oh my God. Like I'm here now. I'm here now. Like, what are we going to do?
Yes.
And the friends are so relieved. And then they're like, okay, I'll tell you some stuff that's not in the report.
And this is where we learn.
He would have her sign contracts, which he requires her to state that there was no sexual abuse.
This is a legal document in which Alyssa Turney is made to initial every bullet point saying she had not been physically or sexually abused, but she had to do that in front of a notary public.
Legally binding contracts saying that there was no sexual abuse.
Now,
and then they're taking that to it, like for her to sign in front of a fucking notary.
Now, what he's doing is, I'm sorry, I know. I really just got like dizzy.
Yeah,
I'm sorry,
I know.
Like,
no, because you think about the fact that the notary is looking at this like 8, 10, 12 year old girl signing a contract saying there's no sexual abuse. How is that not the first sign that there's sexual abuse?
It also doesn't make any sense. It's like a parental, custodian, and childhood agreement. This is an agreement entered to in between Michael R. Turney and the current legal guardian, Melissa, blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, I agree that Alyssa M. Turney is incorrigible.
Yeah.
It's all written in this like fake legalese.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. It's all a word salad. And it's also about how he never sexually abused her. He makes her like initial, like,
yeah.
I mean, it's a laundry. It's so long.
And then he also calls Child Protective Services and tells them, if Alyssa ever calls and accuses me of molesting her, you should not believe her. She's trying to extort me. To which I say, how do you not have people out there interviewing that child 5 seconds
later?
Right.
You say, sure, Jan,
yep,
click.
Absolutely.
Go, go, go. We got a code red.
Fucking child molester just called us. We got to get out there.
Our CPS listeners and our notary listeners.
Yeah.
Please explain to me what's going on and how this happens,
no,
because
listen,
I'm having a hard time.
I worked extensively with CPS as a foster parent. I know how hard they work and I know how overworked they are. I know how many cases they have. They cannot even get to all the kids that they are like charged with overseeing. I get that. They are doing God's work on earth. But when someone comes to you and says, I'm definitely not molesting my kid out of the clear
and
blue sky.
And don't listen to her.
And don't listen to her when she tells you that I am. I need to know how that didn't result in an investigation happening immediately.
I agree. And I looked up the notary thing.
Yeah.
Because I was like, what? Apparently, and again, notary people, please educate me on this because it was confusing when I looked it up. But apparently they're like not really supposed to read what they're notarizing. It's like a privacy thing.
Oh, interesting.
But it's also like, but there's a child.
Uh-huh.
And there's a, but it's also like, maybe we should have some oversight on what the notary is notarizing?
Right, like, because I'm with you that she's a child. Somebody, like, a legal guardian should be, oh, wait, the legal guardian is right there with her. You know what I mean? So, okay, I can get past the notary thing if that's the law. The CPS thing, I need an explanation
for. No, there's
I
really don't understand how that isn't the biggest red flag.
Like, it's
maybe
me
of
holding
all.
A gun to a bank teller and saying, I'm not robbing this bank. Give me all your money. You know what I mean?
What?
You know what I mean? Was that a good analogy, do you think?
I'm feeling insane.
I know.
So, oh God. So, but this is, but he's doing this and we just get more and more recordings.
Well, we're getting more recordings because what's happening now is that like right before Alyssa went missing, there's a recording of Mike calling one of his sons.
I made a foolish, stupid mistake and tried to talk to Alyssa, which was a total absolute fucking waste. Probably going to lose the house. Everything else is going to be fucked over because of some stupid ass fucking bitch.
He kind of sees the writing on the wall that she isn't going to stay quiet anymore.
Yes.
And so he's kind of like trying to cover all his bases by making her sign this and calling CPS. But it's like, How are those not red flags?
Well, and Sarah is saying now, in hindsight, like, he was so rageful towards her because what happened was the sexual abuse happened in the truck. Maybe separately, the instance that Charity described happened.
I think there were several regular incidents.
And she's fighting back, and she's about to turn 18, so he's got to do something.
He's got to do something. So just to, like, bring everyone up to speed.
Yeah.
Michael Turney is evil. He was abusing Alyssa. He's abusing Sarah in a lot of ways as well. So he's abusing Alyssa, and he's furious at her for it.
Yes.
Let that sink in.
Uh-huh.
He's covering his bases, calling her crazy. He's also homicidal.
Yes.
Because he had all these weapons.
He was going to kill all the electricians in town.
He had a manifesto.
Yeah.
And so, like, Sarah remembers him also, like, talking about how easy it would be to kill somebody and hide a body.
Yes.
So now that Sarah has all of this hindsight and all of this information, Sarah Turney has a theory.
Yeah. So she thinks what happened is Mike, the dad, picked Alyssa up from school on that day in May, took her to the desert. He tried to sexually assault her again. She fought back, and he decides that day is the day he's going to kill her.
Right.
And he picked the last day of school because no one would be looking for her.
Right. And also, we just briefly get back to the note real quick.
Yeah.
Because Sarah's like, you know what? My sister did write that note, but that was from another fight they had.
I believe that note was from a previous time period, and then my father found it and planted it in her room.
And it also says, Dad, I took $300 from you. Sarah's like, that was from an incident long before this, and that money was repaid. This is an old note that he found and saved to use on the day that he actually killed her.
Right. And, like, what about this mysterious 5 a.m. phone call? We're going to ask Sarah about this because it's on the records, but, like, I need to get to the bottom of this phone call.
Yes. Sarah's making the realization that he did this while he's still in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And she's saying that, like, he would call her and she just wouldn't take the call, wouldn't call him back. And she, like, basically lets that relationship die.
Yes. So Sarah's going to the cops and she's like, yeah, hi. I'm on the right side.
I believe you now. We did it.
He did it. So, like, what are we going to do about this?
Yeah.
And the cops are like, totally hear you. Where is the physical evidence?
Unfortunately, because it's too late.
We don't have Alyssa's body. There's no crime scene. There's no blood. There's no DNA. And Sarah's like, I don't give a shit. I want him charged.
Yes. Yes.
Right now. So it's 2017, 16 years missing. This piece of shit gets out of prison because remember, he served 9 years for the fucking bombs.
Yes.
And at this point, it's been years since he's spoken to Sarah.
Yeah.
And so they meet up at a coffee shop.
Because Sarah wants to confront him and say to him, to his face, I know you did this. Give him an opportunity to confess to her. She also says he's never been formally questioned. He's never been formally confronted. I needed to fucking do that.
And she does
it. And she records it.
Like, she records it.
Yeah.
Kind of secretly, but kind of not really.
Yeah.
And she basically says to his face, I think you killed my sister and I think you were sexually assaulting her. Like, what do you have to say for it?
Exactly.
And he denies it. And they kind of go back and forth. And we'll get much more of that later.
Yeah.
But he kind of go back and forth. And then he says,
be there at the deathbed, Sarah, and I'll give you all the honest answers you want to hear.
That is the closest thing to a confession that I believe we'll ever get from my father.
Be there at my deathbed and I'll give you all the honest answers you want to hear.
Yeah.
Now, Sarah hears this as a confession and she's like, this is the closest.
I remember when Sarah told me that in person.
Yeah.
And I was like, what?
Whoa.
Yeah.
And at that moment, Sarah sort of comes to terms with the fact that her sister is
gone.
Gone.
Yeah.
Now we go to the cops, like sitting to camera, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, right, but keep playing that audio. So the full sentence is, come to my deathbed, Sarah, and I'll give you all the honest answers you want to hear. And it's the same thing I'm telling you now.
Yeah.
And so they're like, it's shitty, it's controlling, it's cruel, but it's kind of not enough.
Right.
And Sarah's like, all right, well, now what then, motherfucker? Like, we got to get this guy.
We got to get him. And so Sarah, the cops say to Sarah, you got to go to the media.
And she goes, all right, bet. So she starts a podcast called Voices for Justice.
She says, she's like, tries to get, like, major media to care. They don't care. She's like, I learned about podcasting. And she's like, she did what we all did. She used her shitty laptop with her shitty microphone
sat down in the closet
and made a podcast.
And did it.
Yeah.
And she talks to specifically about this case and her sister, Alyssa. So she starts talking to everyone she can think of. Everyone she knows, everyone Alyssa knows, everyone her father knows.
She's getting the full context of the police report. So all the friends that are here with us now were interviewed by the cops.
Yeah.
And she's, like, getting the backstory to, like, the everything that she read in the file.
She talks to everyone except her four brothers who were not interested.
Which, we're going to have questions about that, too.
Of course.
Yeah.
Now, she's doing the podcast, and again, like most of us, no real plan, no episode layout. She just wants to get the story told. But she's talking to all of these people, and she talks to Cousin David.
Yeah.
Cousin David lived with Sarah and Alyssa and their father in the late 90s.
Yeah.
And he has this story, like another person who just made zero slash all the wrong decisions.
Yes.
One day, he has two stories, actually. One day he picked up Alyssa from school or whatever. And when, again, once Alyssa is alone with someone she deems safe,
yep,
starts talking about how, quote, crazy her dad was. To which cousin David goes, I don't want to get involved.
Yeah.
Looking back, I probably should have shut up and let her, you know, tell me what was going on. But I didn't.
But I didn't.
Imagine being Alyssa. This is maybe the second time you're trying to tell someone what's going on and they're just telling you to be quiet.
Well, but then even worse, he's like home alone one day. He finds a videotape labeled Dr. Doolittle.
And he's like, ooh, let me watch this. And I'm like, okay.
He puts it in the VCR.
Again, but it's labeled by like Penn.
Yes.
It's not like a, no, like, a
it's not
real.
Like it's not like a Blockbuster.
Right. With like Eddie Murphy on the
be
cover.
Be Kind Rewind.
No, no, no.
Not that.
It's like a homemade video that's labeled Dr. Doolittle to yeah. which he's like, I'll try. I'll
let,
pop that
let
in.
Let me put it in.
I put it on. The next thing I see, there was a girl. She was nude. You know, she had no shirt on. Her arms were on the side, but she had a newspaper that was covering her eyes. And I already knew it. I mean, it was obviously Alyssa. You could tell by the profile that that was her.
There was a newspaper covering her eyes.
And she's tied up. The video was clearly made by Mike, the dad.
And what does he do? He moves out in the middle of the night and leaves two young girls
yeah.
in the house with the piece of shit father.
And like, all the credit to Sarah for not just,
jumping through the microphone and strangling this guy?
Yes, yes.
Because he goes, I didn't want to get CPS involved and ruin the tourney name. Excuse me.
I know.
The only person making good on the tourney name is Sarah.
Yeah.
No one gave a shit before. What are you talking about? You knew it was so fucked that you left in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
But you left two little young girls.
I mean, it's so.
One of them you just saw on camera.
And like the other, this tourney name thing, that's also why the brothers didn't want to participate
blood on his
in the
hands
podcast.
Too,
I know,
this guy.
It's wild.
So, but making this podcast got Sarah cut off from her brother. She's not invited to any of the family functions. Like, she's done.
And we're going to see later, she says she still talks to them. I have a lot of questions about this. Because she's so clearly telling the truth. Like,
I mean,
what
obviously.
Sarah has found out is clearly what happened.
Right, and if you don't want to face the truth or whatever,
yeah.
like, I guess that's your prerogative. But, like, to cut her off is just like, all right, bro. Like,
I know.
Fine. So, Sarah's, like, making the podcast, but it's not getting enough attention. It's
yes.
like not making the moves that she wants to be made. And so she discovers TikTok. And when I tell you,
yeah.
Sarah Turney went crazy viral overnight. That is not, I'm not being hyperbolic. It was like one day she wasn't viral and the next day she fucking was.
It's so, I just remember meeting Sarah like so many years ago. And
a
she was this like sweet, nice, quiet woman.
Talking about like, I'm going to start, I have this podcast. I'm making this podcast
yeah.
about my sister.
And it was like, we were trying to help her. We were trying to, you know, whatever. And then all of a sudden you're like, do you know that Sarah Turney has a million followers?
I remember
TikTok.
Sitting on the floor
yes.
with her and Mike, and
yes.
she was telling us all about this.
I know.
But when I, overnight.
Yeah. And she says, like, she's making videos about her missing sister. Her videos are getting, like, 20 million
Millions.
Views.
Millions.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's mobilizing people. People
yes.
are taking action. They're demanding. They're making phone calls. They're doing everything.
They demand that the dad be arrested, and he is.
Yeah.
Because they demanded it.
But, like, this is what she, like, this
yeah.
is what she wanted, and then she went out and did it, and now it's happening.
It is the most positive use of social media I have ever seen.
Ever.
Yeah.
Ever. And so August 20th, 2020, the father's arrested. It all happened because Sarah went to TikTok and
yes.
said, maybe I'll try this platform. And if TikTok
totally.
Didn't work, she would have found another thing to make it work.
She would have invented one.
Like,
yeah.
We were going to be here no matter what.
100%.
Because like, that's what Sarah does, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So TikTok happened to strike for her. But if it wasn't that, I promise you, she would have invented a fucking
yeah.
app to go
viral.
We're
bringing
on.
Back MySpace.
She would have been like the Sarah Turney app. Or
yeah,
the
yeah,
Alyssa
yeah.
Turney app. She would have invented something to make herself viral. I have no doubt in my
no
mind.
No question.
So August 20th, 2020, the father, piece of shit, is arrested. July 2023, he's on trial for the murder of Alyssa Turney.
And they're saying that like the state has a heavy burden.
Because there's no body, there's no murder scene, there's no murder weapon, there were no witnesses to Alyssa's murder. Beyond that, a whole bunch of the evidence that friends of Alyssa and Sarah wanted to bring in was excluded from the start.
All of the evidence about the sexual abuse was excluded.
Because they're allegations.
Right.
That's what the court is saying.
What is so insane is that we are told they couldn't have that brought in because Mike has a right to face his accuser, but Alyssa isn't here.
That's the Constitution, baby.
She's not here because he killed
exactly.
her.
Exactly. We've been down this road before.
But my whole thing is like, I don't understand how in all of the years of this republic, they hadn't been like, oh, right, people are going to kill their accusers
yeah.
so that they can't testify against them, and then we can't bring get evidence in. That seems like a loophole we should fix.
Yeah, no, we're not gonna.
But
it's infuriating. Wild.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It's like, well, that constitutes. It was written when?
Right. It's also like if you're Robert Durst and you're on trial for a murder that you definitely did, but you die mid trial, the charges are dropped.
Like instantly.
Makes no sense.
Makes zero sense at all. So the accusations aren't allowed in. It's July 17th, 2023, and we learn about this thing that Arizona has. It's called a Rule 20. It's a super rare thing, but basically the defense has every right to go to the judge and say, hey, judge, what do you think?
Yeah.
Is there enough evidence to convict here? Should this go to a jury?
Because
yes or no?
Like the jury that's been sitting for the trial probably shouldn't get this case because the prosecution's case wasn't strong enough. Now they say
Rule 20 motions for judgment are almost never granted. It's incredibly rare for judges to not allow jurors to decide.
I have considered the issues raised by the defense. It is ordered granting defendant's motion for a Rule 20 judgment of acquittal. I will order the defendant released.
The jury that's heard the whole trial now doesn't get to, like, consider the evidence. It's insane to
me. Well, guess what? In this case, the judge does exactly that, which means that this piece of shit is acquitted.
He's just instantly acquitted.
Just like, bye.
Yeah.
So this is when Sarah's like, wow, my sister was failed by absolutely everyone.
Every person in every institution.
Cousin David, everybody.
Oh, and he can't be charged again.
Right.
Unless there's, like, amazing new evidence, they would have to charge him to, like, it was second-degree murder that he was charged, so it would have to be first-degree. Like, the cops are saying he's going to be a free man for the rest of his life.
Yeah, Sarah's options right now are very, very limited.
Yes.
And so it's 2024 now. It's 7 months after the trial. Sarah hasn't spoken to her father in 5 years. And she's like, wait a second. No one's like actually questioned him.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Like she just wants that closure, I guess, like for lack of a better term. So she calls him to set this up.
Now, I want to give her so much credit for this because this must have been so hard for her
because
to do.
Because you have to play to his ego and his attitude.
Yes.
And like, you just have to kind of give a little to get a little.
And also,
give a lot to get a little.
The other thing too that I couldn't stop thinking about was like, he is not behaving like a man who lost his daughter and he doesn't know where she is. You know what I mean?
He's not mourning. He's not grieving.
And he's not, has no thought for how this would be for, like, if this were Daisy and Daisy thought I killed her sister and I didn't do it and she hated me because she believed it, I would be sobbing every day. I would be only thinking of her and how this affects her. And like, there's just, it's just so obvious that he did it. And there's none of that.
No, he's such an asshole because on the phone, he's like, Sarah.
But of course, he's going to go to the interview. Well, of course, they've always got to talk on camera.
Of course. But on the phone, he's like,
okay, I know we have our differences.
What I'm asking from you is honesty. So if you want a hug from me, if you want me to shake your hand, then let's sit down and have a real talk. You already got acquitted, Dad. There's nothing left for you to lose.
She's like, listen, asshole, I want honesty from you. Let's cross the hug bridge when we get there, which will be never. Are we meeting or not?
Yeah.
And he's like, fine. So they sit down and like, he is the smuggest asshole. And he pulls his phone out. He's like, I'm filming too. And I'm like, cool story, bro.
I know.
Like, he's in this fucking cheap suit and he's sitting there and he's like so smug.
And Sarah's just trying to, like, she's just trying to ask him the questions he was never asked, you know?
He's just like instantly bickering with her.
Asking about the sexual assault. He's just, it never happened. Was Alyssa afraid of you? She was never afraid of me.
Just, you know, the word salad. He's so infuriating. Why are you doing this? You're destroying our family.
Your brothers,
like,
don't want to talk to you. And then and then he says to her, if you're going to continue with this attitude, I'll leave. And then he tells her to calm down.
But in that moment, it's so important to say that Sarah, she's handling it flawlessly.
She sees what he's trying to do.
But she's handling it flawlessly. And he's like, why are you doing this? And she's just sitting there. And she isn't saying anything. And he's going on and on. And as Sarah is silent, he goes, you really need to calm down.
Yeah.
And like seeing that visual, was like, well, there it is.
And it was
They're
also,
all the same.
The look on her face was, you said that because you think it's going to infuriate me. And I'm not giving you
but
that.
She was sitting there silent and perfectly calm and he's telling her to calm down. So Sarah's not taking the bait, not even a little bit.
No.
And at this point he's like, I don't know why I'm talking to my daughter with so much hatred. And she goes, I'm gonna stop you right there.
I feel nothing for you. I will leave this conversation and never think of you again. My children will not know who you are.
Are you going,
I will not
Sarah,
speak your name.
Oh, now for the audience,
I wish you the best.
My kids aren't going to know your fucking name.
Yeah.
I'm not here. I don't hate you. And I like, I loved that.
I forgot that you existed.
I forgot that you existed. Like, and I just love that because how many times have I said this on the show where it's like, hatred, I don't even, you don't even exist to me. Like, I don't even, like when you get to the point, dear listener, it's so freeing to feel nothing towards people in your life who've harmed you. And so the way Sarah goes, like, because that was another way to bait her too. How can my daughter hate me this way? And she goes, hate you?
Yeah.
I don't even think about you. Like, my kids aren't even going to know that you're on this fucking godforsaken earth.
I mean, Sarah, I want to say to you, God bless you, because you've done the work and you are in that place.
Totally.
And I don't know. I don't know if I'd be able to do it.
He wanted to rattle her and he didn't.
Yeah.
And at one point she goes, okay, like, this isn't going anywhere. You know, this conversation's over.
She's basically like, I got what I needed for my documentary, you idiot. Now I'm out of here.
Like, everyone sees you for who you really are.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. So she gets up to leave and he goes, why are you doing this, Sarah, to make money off your dead sister?
Oh,
I mean,
God.
If she is dead. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Now, you know what? I'm sure people could argue, anyone would say that Alyssa's dead. It's been X amount of years.
Yeah.
But wow.
I know. I mean, of course.
Wow.
Of course. And the infuriating part is that, like, he's been acquitted. Like, he could
wants.
Admit it and they couldn't retry him.
Right. And it's just, you know, it ends with, like, this guy is throwing a tantrum.
Yeah.
And Sarah, and it leaves with Sarah leaving him there like a fucking loser.
Yes.
And he got nothing
in
he wanted.
In his cheap, ugly suit.
She got everything he wanted.
Yeah.
He got none of it. And he sits there, like, left alone in a room.
Yeah. And, like, the best part is that it ends with what we know of Sarah.
After spending so many years talking about my sister Alyssa's case, I've decided that I want to help other families, too.
This is 17-year-old Asia Cowell. She went missing on September 7th.
She wants every family to get justice. And, like, that's how it ends. Like, she's so inspired to go out and find these other families and help these other families tell their own stories and look for justice in their own way and with Voices for Justice and with media pressure. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you haven't listened to both of those podcasts, you need
to be
doing that right away.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't say enough about it. But this is her mission now. Her mission is to help these families. And that is because it's part of her healing journey.
Yeah. And she says, this is how you stop generational abuse. She goes, I had to take the power back. It all, she says it stops here. And I'm like, but so much also started here.
Yeah.
Because she's giving people a platform and she, like, you look at what she did and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, we can do that?
Right.
Oh my God, I didn't know we could do that.
Because it's her whole journey. Like, she was her father's biggest supporter for up into her 20s, like, you know, for years and years and years. And then she just saw the truth.
And, like, after everything she's been through, for her to sit there and kind of, like, laugh at him.
Yes.
And be like, oh, I'm leaving.
Yes.
Like, I came prepared.
Yeah.
I know exactly who you are. I'm at peace. She can do that because she's at peace.
Yes.
And it took hell and back to get there.
Yeah.
But, like, to have this sort of beacon for people who are going through it, for Sarah to also do it so publicly.
Yes.
Is invaluable to this insane world that we live in right now.
Girl, we did Family Secrets, The Disappearance of Alyssa Turney. Fam, this is one of the ones you got to go watch. It's really, really, really well made. The story is incredible. Sarah's incredible. Listen to Voices for Justice. Listen to Media Pressure.
Yeah, follow her on TikTok. And our interview with her is dropping imminently.
Right now. So our interview with Sarah Turney is live right now on our Patreon. Go check it out. She is a force of nature.
Yeah.
Girl, what are we doing next?
The Girl on the Milk Carton on Peacock. This is like 2 40-ish minute episodes. So we're going to do it in one.
Oh, yay.
Yeah.
All right, great. So this is not one where we're doing two separate episodes. We're doing one episode combining the two.
Yeah, because it could have just been a 90-minute doc. They split it up into two eps, and I'm Peacock girl, what are you doing? So we're just going to do it in one story because we got a lot of requests for this one, too.
All right, great. So fam, stay tuned for the trailer for that, and we love you.
We love you.
Sarah, we love you.
Yeah, we love, stay safe out there, everyone. And you can do it.
And you can do it.
Like, you can do this.
And you can do anything.
You can do it.
All right, goodbye.
Bye, we love you.
Dairy has begun printing the pictures of missing children on its milk cartons. In the hope that that will help authorities find them.
Janelle Matthews, 12 years old, alone in the house, was kidnapped.
It affected people for decades. It still does.
Greeley was a sleepy little town.
There's a deep fear now in us.
Something like this had never happened before.
I'm scared. I wouldn't want it to happen to me.
As the search for Janelle Matthews intensifies, it will be a Christmas Eve devoid of joy.
The longer you go without knowing, the less hope there is that she's alive.
We would do anything to get her back.
She remains one of a growing number of abducted children.
December 20th was always a date you remembered.
Kids come and go with no concern. The boogeyman is outside.
taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
Hey, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Jillian.
We've been making the True Crime Obsessed podcast for almost 9 years now.
Yeah, each week on TCO, we tell a riveting true crime story by recapping a documentary about the case.
With nearly 400 million downloads and over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, we can say with confidence that if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now might be the time to give us a try.
We cover the cases everyone is talking about and also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
Find True Crime Obsessed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.